All right, guys, welcome back. I mean, welcome to the show. Welcome back to it from yesterday. Something. Anyway, I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Yeah. Today on the show, Eric Margolies is going to tell us some things about some stuff. Mostly, I think about Yemen. Is what I'm going to ask him. But, you know, there's a lot of wars going on around there. I might could ask him about some other things, too. Like Libya. What's the damn deal in Libya, other than there's no such thing anymore? They have new names for the halves or thirds of it now, yet? They're still fighting over who's going to supposedly rule the whole thing one day. All right, so that should be good. Yeah. So normally at this time of the show, I'd say stop by scotthorton.org. Actually, I guess I could say that. Stop by scotthorton.org if you would like to be frustrated because the website is there, only for some reason I can't log into it. So I can't update the blog or anything. I don't know if Adam can log in. But anyway, and the MP3s don't work. But the site is there. You know, somebody tweeted me this morning and said that my podcast feed had just disappeared from his phone. What? I'm over the time limit now, I guess, for iTunes or whatever, where they are now unpersoning me. Because the podcast feed has been down for so long. How do you like that? Maybe now would be a good time to just quit. I don't know. How am I ever going to build my audience back up to previous levels again? You know, they were so astronomical, it seems out of reach. Yeah. But no, I mean, I know that some people have said, wow, I didn't really realize how much I had integrated your show into my life. And I'm, you know, I've gotten tweets like that. And I guess I just recognize that some people are going to say, well, good. Hell, if it's been 3 weeks without a cigarette, I might as well stay quit. You know, that kind of thing. But anyway, well, whatever. Now's the part of the show where normally I would say, head on over to scotthorton.org. I guess you can. Oh, yeah. Does the chat room work? Let's see if I can at least log in the chat room and say hi to the guys. Hey, chat room guys, are you there? Let me look. That's a freaking thing. Hey, yeah, it is working. Hey, check it out, everybody. You can log into the chat room if you want. At scotthorton.org/chat. Give me one sec. I'm going to do that right now. Let's see. Yeah, just put in a fake name and a CAPTCHA, and you're in, dude. And the CAPTCHAs are easy. They're pictures of street addresses. So they're not real hard-to-read squiggly lines where you're like, what the hell? And try three times. Hey, and there's some people in there, too. They figured it out before I did. Hey, everybody, how's it going? Hey, everybody, listen. Join up the chat room. ScottHorton.org/chat. And, yeah, sorry about the thing, man, with the computers. They broke. And apparently, I guess, if you ask Sneaker, man, they broke real good. I mean, bad. And so, and it's a lot of content, man. It's a decade worth of audio, so that's a problem. And then the backup server, it quit backing up about 2 years ago, but nobody noticed. So I guess we have audio, you know, from 2013 and whatever. If you want to go back and listen to old stuff, prove how good I am on everything all this time, how good I have been, you could do that. But yeah, anyway, but they're working on it. You know, it is what it is. It's all right. Soon again, you'll be able to hear the show there at scotthorton.org. Also on Voices of Liberty and at liberty.me. Speaking of which, I need to write a note to myself that I need to talk to Jeff Tucker about. When are we doing a goddamn show again, man? We should do another show, man. Yeah, Liberty.me, they run the podcast there, selected episodes. Oh, I know, by the way, if you're into this kind of thing, I got three archives, that you can hear at the top of antiwar.com right now. Dan McAdams, James Bovard, and Yosef Butt. Ukraine, Waco, and the Iran deal. So if you're really jonesing for interviews later, you can catch up on those. Right there at the top right of antiwar.com, where I am the opinion editor. Okay, so there's that. I don't know. But here's the other thing I should say is that this show is brought to you by the War State. And I don't mean the military-industrial complex is, you know, paying me. I mean, that's the book by the great Mike Swanson. And, man, you'll really like it. It's the history of Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy and their grapplings with the permanent military state after World War II. Grapple with it they did. And you'll really want to read it. It's great. And you can get the audiobook of it, too, if you go to audibletrial.com/Scott Horton Show. In fact, you can get it for free there that way. And WallStreetWindow.com, that's Mike Swanson's real business, is he does investment advice. Good investment advice. And when you follow it, then head on over to RRBI. See how easy it is to remember when you say it that way? RRBI.co. That's Roberts and Roberts Brokerage, Inc. And they will help you to buy gold, silver, platinum, palladium. I mean, anybody's got to have at least, what, 10% of your money in metals if you have any money, right? But if you're a libertarian, then probably more than that. So check out Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc. And, of course, there's the Council for the National Interest. That's Phil Giraldi's group in Washington, D.C., basically there to oppose the Israel lobby's agenda in warping American imperial foreign policy, which is already bad enough. Without having to be all bent around what Israel wants. Then there's also TaxpayersUnited.org. Go to TaxpayersUnited.org/GovPensions. They're helping sponsor this show and point out the corrupt nature of the so-called civil servants payment programs. Why should it be that the servants make so much more on average, sometimes even twice as much on average, as their equivalent in the market? Isn't that crazy? That means that their equivalent in the market is the one who's forced to subsidize their above-market price for their labor. Does that seem right to you? Me either. And yes, I am picking on school bus drivers as well as cops and judges because, well, none of them have a right to tax money, if you ask me. Of course, there's the Future Freedom Foundation at FFF.org, Jacob Hornberger and the group over there. Darren'sCoffee.com. Hey, Darren, send me some more coffee, man. I'm out of coffee. So far, I like the Kenyan the best, but, you know, there's, man, it's really good stuff. And it's cheap, and you use promo code Scott, and you get free shipping, and you're basically paying the same as you would for a plastic can of Folgers at the Walgreens. When you get free shipping by using promo code Scott at Darren'sCoffee.com. And then, of course, sign up for Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom. Buy a bust of Ron Paul, Harry Brown, and Murray Rothbard at MyHeroesThink.com. Get some vitamins if you're one of them healthy type people who likes being healthy. Whole Food Multi-Complete Vitamins. They help sponsor the show as well. Coupon code Scott Horton. You save 20%. And Go-Kart Galaxy, man, if you ride mini bikes or go-karts, you got kids with go-karts, GoKartGalaxy.com, your online source for go-kart and mini bike parts. And, yeah, there you go. So thanks to my sponsors. Oh, LibertyStickers.com and TheBumperSticker.com, of course. Thanks all of y'all for helping support this show. Without you, there would be no show. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world, all specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com. In America today, teachers, cops, judges, and other so-called public servants make far more than the average taxpayer. And their pensions? Well, if the people knew, they'd join us. That's where you come in. Taxpayers United of America is embarking on a great new project to train activists how to take on the parasites in your communities. The entire process, from prying loose the facts to disseminating the truth to the people. The next of these great workshops is Saturday, April 25th in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. It's just $15. For more information, go to taxpayersunited.org/govpensions. All right, I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, the Scott Horton Show. So, coming up, Eric Margolies, man, he's going to say some wise things to us. I got plenty of news to get to here. Better goddamn get to it, man. I want to talk about that first, I guess so. No, I want to talk about police state stuff first. We'll get back to, we'll do the Yemen thing with Margulies, and then I got Iran and other stuff. So, first of all, who, what, why? I got to admit, I don't like what's-his-name all that much. Yeah. But they do have a couple of good writers there that I like, and in this case, they're publishing my good friend Roger Charles, who is the co-author of the book on Oklahoma City. It's called Oklahoma City, What the Investigation Missed and Why It Matters. And I think you should read it. And, you know, I think it's actually not perfect. It doesn't have everything that Roger would have put in it, actually. The co-author, I think, kind of dumbed it down a little bit. But I don't care. I mean, if the point was to finally break through, make this an acceptable subject of discussion or what have you, then good. And that seemed to have worked to a degree. I mean, maybe too little too late, but the other co-author has been invited to talk at the New America Foundation and stuff like that. So, you know, I don't know. Provides for a good YouTube to pass around. But anyway, the story is called Exclusive: Oklahoma City Bombing Breakthrough. And, not the best title, but anyway. Oklahoma City Bombing Breakthrough, Part 1 and Part 2. And Part 1 is about how Andre Carl Strassmeyer was a fake Nazi. He wasn't a Nazi. He was a fake Nazi working for the government, infiltrating Nazis, apparently provoking them. And that Andre Carl Strassmeyer did, in fact, have a relationship with Timothy McVeigh. Far beyond the one time we met at a gun show alibi that has been passed around, and with new sources verifying that. And then the second part is about how the FBI shut down the ATF's investigation into Elohim City and said, we'll handle it, and then they failed to handle it. And 186 people died, 87. And that's the truth of it. And it was a big conspiracy theory, supposedly, for so long, but nope, it was the truth. And I've been telling you since 95, just because in Austin, with the Access Channel and everything, even way back then, you had militia guys and stuff from the very beginning saying, hey, it wasn't us militia guys who did it, it was the Nazis who did it, and they were all working for the feds. And they were right. I mean, that kind of stuff has been just kind of common knowledge in you know, libertarian and populist right-wing circles in Austin since the whole time, since 95, 96. And it was true. And you read about it at whowhatwhy.com. And for me, that's good news that Roger Charles has written a thing and it's been published. I mean, for God's sake, man, those people deserve the truth, don't you think? Omar Khadr granted bail. Here's more good news. Release isn't immediate, but I guess is imminent. And then I love this, the way the article begins. It's at CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Company here. Convicted war criminal Omar Khadr. The Canadian, transferred to an Alberta facility after serving time in Guantanamo Bay, has been granted bail. Court of Queen's Bench Justice June Ross, in a 23-page decision, granted Cotter's bail request Friday morning. Cotter's release is pending a hearing May 5th that will set out conditions. Even though the applicant has pled guilty to serious offenses, he should be granted judicial interim release, the judge wrote, because he has a strong basis for an appeal, and the risk to public safety is not such that it is in the public's best interest that he remain in pre-appeal detention in a manner that could render his appeal irrelevant. I don't know. Anyway, maybe we could try to... I'm still trying to get Dennis Edney on the show today. We'll see what happens with that. That's Cotter's lawyer. But here's the thing about this, man. This guy ought to be released and have all charges expunged and sealed and erased and with prejudice and all of that kind of crap. If I was a Canadian judge, I'd be screaming and yelling and my powdered wig falling off of my head as I called the government every four-letter word I could think of and demanded that the young man be released, compensated enormously, and set free to go live his life however he felt like, anywhere in Canada he felt like. Are you kidding me? The convicted war criminal is nothing of the kind. Convicted he may be, but even then, no, not really, because he was only convicted by the made-up, fake kangaroo court down at Guantanamo Bay. That would be far more fitting on the other side of the wall under Castro's rule than any American system. And anyway, and he sure as hell isn't a war criminal either. What he's accused of, the act that he did not do, that he supposedly did do, was simply an act of self-defense from an invading army. You're telling me for a civilian to defend himself from an invading military force by throwing a grenade at them is a war crime? Oh, they try to say, oh, but his victim was a medic. His victim was a medic who was carrying a machine gun and fighting in a battle. It was the Delta Force. And he wasn't acting as a medic. He was acting as a soldier at the time. And it wasn't Cotter that killed him anyway. He was just the only, you know, barely alive, three-quarters of a corpse that they could find laying on the ground that they could still persecute when the whole thing was over. He was shot multiple times, and they just found him buried in a pile of rubble. And then the lines that they fed him to repeat when they tortured him and threatened his family, credibly threatened his family, and tortured him and beat him and kept him awake for weeks and God knows what they put him through. The confession that they got out of him was a total hoax, a ridiculous hoax. Oh, yeah, so there I was, and I pulled the pin out of the grenade with my teeth, and I threw it back over the wall behind me, over my head, like an episode of the A-Team. Yeah. He couldn't possibly be guilty of what they said he did, and even if he was, that's not a war crime anyway, and even if it was, they already tortured him. He was a 15-year-old. Did I mention he was a 15-year-old boy who was stranded there with some Taliban fighters by his father? Hey, you stay with these guys. They'll take good care of you. See you around, said his father and left. Did I mention that part, that he was 15 years old? And even if he threw a grenade, which he didn't, and even if that was a war crime, which it's not, he was a child. So you can't prosecute him anyway. And even if he wasn't, they tortured him, which means he's done his time anyway. Then they sent him to Gitmo, they tortured him some more and held him without trial or charges for years. So he's done his time anyway. So, thank goodness he's been bailed out. What an injustice. Let's hope his appeal works. Hey, I'll Scott Horton here for Liberty.me. The social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features classes, discussions, guides, events, publishing, podcasts, and so much more. And Jeffrey Tucker and I are starting a new monthly show at Liberty.me, Eye on the Empire. It's just $4 a month if you use promo code SCOTT when you sign up. And hey, once you do, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. Hey, all, Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. Hey guys, how's it going? Welcome back. On the line, I got Eric Margolies from ericmargolies.com. Spell it like Margolis. ericmargolies.com. He wrote the books War at the Top of the World and American Raj, Liberation or Domination. You can also find what he writes at the Uns Review, that's uns.com, and at lewrockwell.com. Welcome back to the show. How are you doing, Eric?
Hello, Scott. Happy to be back with you.
Good, good. Very happy to have you on the show. So, I want to ask you mostly about Yemen and then maybe some other things. But first of all, can we talk a little bit about your latest article, Churchill's Disaster? This is about the centennial of this horrible battle in World War One, and I've never heard anybody say the word out loud. I've only read it, so I'll let you take it from there.
Well, today is, in fact, the commemoration in Turkey of the Battle of Gallipoli in 1915. It's also Anzac Day, Australia and New Zealand Day, when they sent troops for the first time to fight in a British colonial war, as I call it. And it's an important day for Turkey because it was a significant victory for the dying Ottoman Empire. And it really marked the beginning of modern Turkey. So in a political sense, it was a very important event. In a military sense, it was a huge disaster. And the man most responsible for it was First Lord of the Admiralty, Winston Churchill. Mm-hmm.
And now, so where is Gallipoli and what happened there? What was the big deal?
Oh, okay. Well, take your mind to the Black Sea above Turkey. Or below Turkey, above Turkey, and then go a little bit south, Istanbul, formerly Constantinople, down the small sea of Marmara, and then you come to these two long fingers of land that go south into the Aegean, and they are known, that's where Gallipoli is. It's known as the Straits, Straits of Turkey. It's a very strategic area. It's been fought over ever since the Iron Age, practically, because it's the only water maritime transit from the Aegean and Mediterranean up into the Black Sea into Russia.
And so what was so difficult about the British invasion there?
Well, it was very poorly planned. First of all, the British, they could have used drones that we use now. They had a poor understanding of how difficult the topography was there. I've walked over the entire area. It's two long peninsulas of land. It's very pockmarked with ravines and gullies and very steep, very dry and hot and incongenial for fighting. But that's what happened. First the French and then the British thought that a quick maritime naval strike using their Mediterranean fleets could force the Dardanelles open and allow them to steam north to Constantinople, shell the city, and not only knock Turkey out of the war, because Turkey was a principal German ally along with Austria-Hungary, but also open a supply line to Russia, which was suffering and at the time starting to lose the war. That was the plan, but it didn't work out that way because the Turks put up a ferocious defense and they mined, I think it was 8 Western French and British battleships, couldn't fight their way by the old forts, and then the British and the Anzacs were landed around Sulva Bay and other areas, and they became immediately bogged down in the very difficult uphill topography, and the war became stalemated.
And now, so how many people died in this thing?
Well, we think about 250,000 on either side. Whew. Once again,
so that's like a couple of years worth of the Iraq War.
That's right. We got 500,000 total dead, and the both sides fought very valiantly. The Turks, because out of this, a Turkish local commander named Mustafa Kemal seized command of his weakening Turkish troops, made the famous pronouncement, "I am not ordering you to fight, I'm ordering you to die." In other words, die where you stand. The French did it too at Verdun, by the way. The Turks did, and the Turks went and were derided as the sick men in Europe, and the British, with their usual typical racism, sneered at the Turks as inferior human beings, found that these were very ferocious fighters, fought the Allies to a standstill, even though the Allies had all these battleships with big guns lying off the coast. But both sides suffered terrible privations because of logistics problems, lack of water, heat, lack of medical facilities. It was a bloodbath. And in the end, the Allies were defeated, forced to withdraw their troops, and Turks proclaimed a great victory. Turkey remained allied to Germany, and the war was not ended in one big coup. And Winston Churchill, whose idea was forced to resign as First Lord of the Admiralty, and he, to his credit, I must say, as sort of a penance, he went and took up command of a British army regiment on the Western Front and served there pretty much till the end of the war.
Mm. Well, now, so I guess the lesson for me here is, wow, they'll really throw 250,000 of their own guys away on a battle that they cannot win. And over what period of time did this take place?
2 years.
Well, yeah, so there you go. I guess that's like total casualties from the Iraq War for about 2 years worth of time period there. So, yeah, that's...
It was really,
although that's only one small part of the entire First World War that we're talking about here.
Yeah,
one battle.
Most of the fighting was in 1915 in 1 year. You know, I've made a mistake here, Scott. I can't remember now whether 250,000 were dead or dead and wounded.
Oh, I guess you say dead or were wounded in the article here.
Okay, well, then that's the right answer.
Yeah. That's still a freaking catastrophe. And there were other, you mentioned some of the other battles there where they just, where the officers and the politicians behind them just perfectly happy to throw piles of lives on top of machine gun nests to no good end whatsoever.
That's right, Scott. The next year later, the Battle of the Somme, I think it was in 16, the British lost 24,000 dead on one day of the battle. So lives were worth nothing in those days.
But all this reminds me of the thing going on with Russia right now. Because as bad as America's policy in the Middle East is, it mostly only hurts them and sometimes some office workers here in America. But the war all pretty much takes place over there. But when we're talking about screwing around with the Russians in Ukraine and all that, that's the kind of blowback that can hit home in an intercontinental ballistic missile kind of a way. And it's stories like this that make me wonder, you know, I guess I want to believe that somebody up there, even if it's Dr. Strangelove or somebody, he's got a plan. He at least thinks he knows what he's doing. But then when I read articles like this, about Gallipoli and especially all of World War One, it really makes me think that you could actually just grab the staff of the local Sonic Burger and put them in charge of the National Security Council, and they'd be just about as qualified, maybe even better qualified, to make these decisions than the people who are making them, who seem to have no trouble picking a fight far beyond the kind of fight that they ought to be picking, like when we're talking about screwing around in Ukraine. When we got a ceasefire, and then we send in a bunch of troops to train theirs and arm them up and take them back to war. And now I talked us all the way to the damn break. But that's where we're going to pick up this conversation on the other side, is the boobery and incompetence, question mark, on the National Security Council. back then, 100 years ago, and today. And then we're going to talk about Yemen, too. It's the great Eric Margolies, author of American Raj, Liberation or Domination. EricMargolies.com. Hey, Al, Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com. Hey, you own a business? Maybe we should consider advertising on the show. See if we can make a little bit of money. My email address is scott@scotthorton.org. Okay, guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Talking with Eric Margolies about his latest piece, Churchill's Disaster, Gallipoli. And then, so the question is about... You know, just how dangerous are our current leaders? Are they willing to get us into World War One level, crises? Or has a lesson been learned? After all, it was 100 years ago. And if anybody ever learned a lesson of anything, it was that they didn't want to do another World War One kind of thing, right? I don't know. But then we have, and I was trying to get to in my question, too, the idea that they do know what they're doing, maybe, and that, hey, Putin, you know we're just trying to sell some weapons and make some money and whatever. We don't really mean you any harm. We're not really going to put Ukraine in NATO. We're just screwing around and making some money, and you can tolerate that, right? Or maybe it's not that organized. Maybe they really could get us into a war with Russia right now. I don't know. What do you think, Eric?
I refer your listeners to a wonderful book called The Sleepwalkers by Professor Clark from Britain. It is the most detailed and thorough analysis of how World War One started. And it is fascinating because it shows that the war was started by small numbers of militant-minded officials, for example, in France, who hated the Germans because of the loss of Alsace-Lorraine in the 1870 war. And the British, some British officials who were fearful of Germany's economic might and jealous of its growing power. So, and idiots in the Austro-Hungarian establishment who thought that they could just go to war with Serbia, etc. Anyway, he gives a very fine, what the takeaway from the book is that the war wasn't started by a broad consensus, but by a couple of bloody-minded people who managed to sway government policy and direct it so that the war eventually did come to be. Mm-hmm. This is what we're happening now here, too.
All right, now, but so here's the thing, though. I mean, we do have the mutually assured destruction thing, which everybody understands. And I know that there's a push to try to make our forces so superior that we can do the successful first strike and all of that kind of thing. But basically, the people on the National Security Council, they are aware that the Russians have H-bombs and that we can only push things so far, right? But, I mean, I guess it's just a calculated risk and don't worry about it or what? I'm trying to understand the thinking of the people who would get us into this level of crisis over a country as far away as Ukraine, you know?
It's influenced by arrogance, primarily, and hubris. Just as the British sneered at the Turks as third world Muslims who couldn't fight, the people of the American security structure, of course they know the Soviets couldn't retaliate, and they have a very strong nuclear force too, but they think that we're the greatest, we're the exceptional nation, they know that we're the 800-pound gorilla, and they're going to back down. We're just going to bully them out of these positions. They can't afford to stand up to us. Well, it's a stupid position. It's one that has no understanding in history, and it puts nitwits like Condoleezza Rice under the Bush administration dangerously in charge of policy with their fingers on the nuclear trigger.
Man. So do you think at this point the policy is with the new equipment and the training going on over there that, I mean, is it even as well thought out as, yes, we do mean to help the Ukrainian military build itself up to enough strength that they can reconquer Donetsk and Luhansk, however you pronounce them correctly there?
Well, they should be relabeled as no interest to America. It's shocking that we're involved in a sideshow in Ukraine that could lead to a nuclear clash in an area where about which we know nothing and where we have no interest and never will. It's bloody-mindedness that's doing it. The idea that we can stick our finger in Russia's eye, maybe this is the first step to the dismantling of the Russian Federation, as the neocons are calling. All in all, it's a very perilous equation. Training a few Ukrainian troops, not going to do the trick. A nasty person might say, well, look, the Americans had done so well in the Vietnam War and in Iraq, and that these are the same guys who are teaching their military skills to the Ukrainians. Maybe they would better go with another teacher, like the Germans or something like that. Anyway, I'm being facetious, but no, what this is, it's a political gesture, but it's sufficiently provocative to risk the advent of a war. And Britain and Canada have also sent troops, small penny packets of troops.
Yeah, it's amazing. Just enough to make the point, they think, the Cuban Missile Crisis, right? This is all, or at least in the movie of it, this is all language, you know, having a quarantine instead of a blockade and having the ships, you know, cut their path off but not drop death charges or, you know, whatever, this kind of thing. This is all the diplomatic language of actually moving forces around. And for politics' sake, like you say, but it's provocative enough that it really could do the trick. And they're basically screwing around in order to keep John McCain quiet or something, I guess. They're willing to go this far.
Well, you know, we have to understand that the president is under tremendous pressure from the fire-breathing Republicans who never met a war they didn't like and are ready to fight to the last mercenary in the U.S. Army. Just as long as their sons don't have to go to war. They're not scared of wars. We haven't seen one since the Civil War. So it's easy to... But I remember, unfortunately, I'm old enough to remember when we sent our first advisors to Vietnam. That's how it all started. And then the advisors needed troops to protect them. And they couldn't rely on the Vietnamese troops. And then so we decided to send more troops. But then the more troops needed yet more troops. And, well, hence the term from Vietnam, mission creep. And I'll predict that the same thing will happen in Ukraine.
Crazy. Well, and again, back to the obvious ending of that, if nobody puts a halt to it, is nuclear fusion. And temperatures to make the sun seem cool and that kind of thing. So we definitely don't need that. If anybody can do anything about it, go ahead, please. Let me switch to Yemen here. So they said that there is a convoy of Iranian ships heading to Yemen. And they've turned around. And they were accused of having weapons, but apparently nobody ever showed that. I don't know. So the New York Times had two different stories. And maybe they were a day apart, Eric, but one was America's urging the Saudis to stop bombing Yemen. And then the next day, I guess it was, Obama urges Saudi Arabia to continue bombing, announcing the job is not done. Does that mean that Obama thinks that the Saudis can get a regime change from the air and that the war ought to continue until then?
I think so, or maybe troops will be introduced. The Saudis tried to get to rent the Pakistani army, which is a very good army, very crack soldiers. And the Pakistanis wisely turned them down. They didn't want to get involved. But just over the horizon are the Egyptians, and Egypt's bloody-minded dictator, U.S.-supported dictator, al-Sisi, has offered troops for Yemen. So it's possible, and soon, that we could see convoys of Egyptian ships bringing troops down and going into combat in Yemen, which will be the first time since the Egyptian army was in action in Yemen in the early 1960s.
Wow. And now, so I'm sure you saw this thing by Mark Perry in Al Jazeera about the American generals saying that this is crazy. Why are we flying as Al-Qaeda's Air Force when these guys aren't even backed by Iran, and who cares if they were anyway, kind of a thing. But it seems like Obama's position isn't even reluctant. He's actually pushing this thing to go further when it seemed like the Saudis were willing to back down.
Well, it's very hard to tell. You know, there was an interesting article, again, talking about the New York Times, I think it was in yesterday, so the day before, about the late Richard Holbrooke, who was U.S. ambassador to the Balkans and a Kissinger man. And Holbrooke said in his memoirs that that the president, that we have a weak president who's unusually pushed around by the military complex. And I think this is true. The president of the White House is under all kinds of differing pressures. It's being besieged by the Israel lobby. It's got the Pentagon after them. It's got big business which wants more weapons contracts. It's got financial problems. The Democrats are screaming that, you know, you've got to do something, otherwise the Republicans are going to be here at the next election. So they're confused and stumbling, and there's incoherence on foreign and military policy at present.
All right. Now, at the Moon of Alabama blog, they found a story about, it's amazing, about, well, I guess not that surprising, but it's about the Saudis flying in weapons straight to the Al-Qaeda forces in Yemen and having them rename themselves. Let me see if I have it here. They're popular committees now, and this one is now called the Hadramawt Brigade or whatever, but all the Sons of Hadramawt. And all it is Al-Qaeda. They just renamed themselves so that now they can get Saudi weapons. The Moon of Alabama guy's joking that he actually was joking that, oh, now that Al-Qaeda has taken this airport, now the Saudis can fly in a bunch of guns. And then it came true a couple of days later.
Well, it's situation in Yemen is extremely confusing. It's hard to know who's who there and who's supporting who. And, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And I wouldn't be surprised if the Saudis were arming radical groups. But, you know, we put all these labels on these people, which confused everyone, but primarily ourselves. They're Al-Qaeda everywhere in Yemen. It's mostly tribal fighting. It's not ideological. It's not nothing to do with foreign attacks or anything like that. I've been in Yemen since the 60s, and they're all shooting at each other, and the tribes switch sides after a few days, or some bakshish payments under the table. So it's hard to know. And the situation with the diplomats are called very fluid.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we can see that right now where everyone seems to agree that the former dictator is now behind his former enemies, the Houthis, who I used to interview you back a couple of years ago about his war against them, and now he's their guy, or they're his, and in war against, I guess, the socialists, who I saw a documentary where these guys say, everybody says we're Al-Qaeda. Why don't you ask us? We're for Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. Yeah. Viva revolution.
That would clarify matters, except me. The former president, Al-Hadi, who we installed him in Yemen. I mean, we were running Yemen. The U.S. was running Yemen as a little colony. And we installed this two-by-nothing Hadi there because we got tired of the former president we were just talking about, Mr. Saleh. This Hadi is a little drip and was not respected by anyone and eventually run out of the country. And he's also a Saudi puppet, so the Saudis are not trying to put him back in power. But Saleh is reasserting himself, and it's a big mess.
Yeah, sure as hell is. All right, well, I kept you over time, so I'll let you go about your day. But thank you again for your time on the show, Eric. I sure appreciate it.
Cheers, Scott.
All right, y'all, that's the great Eric Margolese. His website is ericmargolese.com, spelled like Margolis. ericmargulies.com. Also, you can find him at lourockwell.com and at unz.com, U-N-Z, unz.com. The books are American Raj, Liberation or Domination, and War at the Top of the World. And we'll be right back in a sec. Hey, y'all. Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. Phone records, financial and location data, Prism, Tempora, X-Keyscore, Boundless Informant. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for offnow.org. Now, here's the deal. Due to the Snowden revelations, we have a great opportunity for a short period of time to get some real rollback of the national surveillance state. Now, they're already trying to tire us by introducing fake reforms in the Congress. And the courts, they betrayed their sworn oaths to the Constitution and Bill of Rights again and again, and can in no way be trusted to stop the abuses for us. We've got to do it ourselves. How? We nullify it at the state level. It's still not easy, but the OffNow project of the 10th Amendment Center has gotten off to a great start. I mean it. There's real reason to be optimistic here. They've gotten their model legislation introduced all over the place, in state after state. I've lost count, more than a dozen. You're always wondering, yeah, but what can we do? Here's something. Something important. Something that can work if we do the work. Get started cutting off the NSA support in your state. Go to offnow.org. All right, I'm mean. This is the thing I do here, man. I guess I could be a bit more specific for you. I am Scott Horton. Horton, like here's a who. He's faithful 100%. Like my dad's name, Horton. Yeah. The website is scotthorton.org. It kind of sort of works now. It ain't 100% and all the audio ain't there and hey, I know that it's been 2 weeks, 2 full weeks now, and it's a problem for me too. I'm very sorry to everyone who has had a problem. I'm very flattered too, I guess. Is that the right word for it? I don't know. It's very nice the way all these people come out of the woodwork to say, what in the hell happened to you? Some people got really worried. Maybe I'd been renditioned off somewhere. But, yeah, well, that's why you gotta listen to the whole show live on LRN, man. Then you'll know. But anyway, yeah, man, it's just server crap, and then, you know, Murphy's Law. Lots of things can go wrong, and so they do, kind of thing, and whatever, I don't know. Anyway, it'll work again soon. I'll have all the archives up for you. And then I'll have to make a real push to get people to sign up for the podcast, and try to get those numbers back up again before all my advertisers leave and don't come back. Yeah, anyway. All right, so news, man. Let's talk about the cops some more. I got Iran stuff, and I got Mexican drug war stuff. I got some other, you know, Mexican drug war should go in the police state section with the rest of them, I guess. Oh, yeah, that one. That's interesting. Okay, listen. So, first of all, I talked about the Oklahoma bombing thing. If you missed it, whowhatwhy.org. They have part one and part two, Oklahoma City Bombing Breakthrough by Roger Charles, all about Andre Strassmeyer and all about how the FBI found out that the ATF was investigating their FBI terrorist ring and so shut the ATF's investigation down, and then the bombing happened, and then, you know, fill in some gaps there. I don't know. But then, so now I want to talk about, oh, and I also talked about Omar Khadr, got granted bail. They're going to let him out. He should have never been in prison in the first place. He was a child soldier and a victim, not a war criminal in any sense. And, so I talked about that. And then now, there's a Montana bill. Oh, you might have wondered if I had, wasn't clear. He was at Guantanamo, but then he was shipped home to Canada back a couple of years ago, but they've been holding him in maximum security, this and that, up in Canada. So now his lawyer's been fighting to get him released up there. So that's I don't guess I really explained that part of it well. But anyway, now check out this good news. Hey, Black Lives Matter movement. I'm talking to you. Oh, yeah. And hey, everybody else, I'm also addressing you too. Check this out. Montana bill to help block federal militarization of police signed into law. Only 49 more times and we're done with this part of one important thing. And now check this out, man. Not only does this new law, not proposed bill, this new law that has been signed into law in Montana, not only does it prohibit the state and local law enforcement from receiving, I guess not every last little thing, but much military equipment from the 1033 program, everything important, the guns, the armored vehicles, drones, grenades, grenade launchers, silencers, you know, every, I guess they still get their night vision goggles and that kind of crap, you know, but everything important under the 1033 program. That's the program where the Pentagon gives their quote unquote surplus that they bought too much of, whatever, to the cops. That had passed by a 46-1 vote in the state Senate and 79-20 in the state House. Did you hear that, Republicans and Democrats and their staff members? It's good politics. In conservative Montana, it's good politics to roll back the federalization and militarization of the police. Challenge the right from the right. This is revolutionary. This is upending what's good about our system that we would like to conserve. We want civilian peace officers, not soldiers. And I know what you're saying, but Scott, what about the DHS program? 1033 is one thing, but the Department of Homeland Security also gives away billions for states to buy these exact same kind of weapons. Not surplus, but brand new. Well, guess what? This law takes care of that too. No lie. And you know how I know? No lie? Because I'm reading it at the 10th Amendment Center right now. Montana bill to help block. Are you on Facebook? Are you on Twitter? Do me a favor, Facebook and Twitter person. Go ahead and send this out there to the people. Montana bill to help block federal militarization of police signed into law. The 1033 program, the DHS militarization program in Montana is now null and void. And this congressman says, he's a little bit flip about this, but he's got a point. He says, if we ever get to the point where we need a grenade launcher, we already have the National Guard. Okay? Which is a very nice to the cops way of saying, we don't need cops to be that well armed around here. And of course, the most militant group that the Montana police have had to face this whole time in decades was the Montana Freemen. And the FBI resolved that peacefully through negotiation, not mass murder. So, no grenade launchers required. Ahem, Waco. So, go forth and, talk about this at least. If you're a politically active type person, maybe do something politically active. In fact, I know a guy who works for somebody who knows somebody in the state legislature or something like that. And I think I'm going to forward this to him. Hey, look, man. And see, it's Montana, right? It's not liberal pansy Massachusetts that's afraid of a little law and order or some kind of whatever right wing phraseology that one could come up with. It's Montana, where they're so conservative that they're rolling back their police state. You see how that works? It's just a frame of reference is all. It's just a matter of spin is all. But if right wing means always 100% law and order, no matter what, let the cops, Uber Alice, et cetera, then you have to attack that position from the right. Well, you don't have to, but it might be useful to. Okay, thank you. Montana bill. You know what? Actually, what's his name? Old Michael Bolden said that they quote that over there at the 10th Amendment Center. Attack the right from the right. They learned that from me. I don't know who I learned it from, but I like it. Maybe I kind of taught that to myself. You know, I would, I was a cab driver for a long time. So if I had like an evil businessman type, then I would say, start with the IRS and then get to the cost of the empire, right? Or if I had an evil social worker type, I'd start with, the war on drugs and then work over to the empire or the IRS for that matter. Get it? Tack the left from the left and the right from the right. Because a real libertarian is always more liberal than a liberal when it comes to freedom. And they're always more conservative than a conservative when it comes to conserving freedom. So, there you go. See, that works. It sometimes works. Okay, now, cops kill unarmed man again. And this one is from last year, but now the video's been released. This is down in San Antonio. They suffocated him to death on the side of the highway. The guy had stolen a car and ran out into traffic. They grabbed him. You watch this thing. He's alive for the first 5 minutes of it or something. And then they throw him on the ground and they all just dogpile on him and suffocate him to death and kill him. And then they just say, oh, he died of excited delirium, which means they killed him. It's right there at libertycrier.com. Excited delirium. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers. Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. So here's a cool new scam for cops getting away with murder. Oh, it's probably not that new of a scam. But did you read about Rekia Boyd? This 22-year-old girl. Wow, it's funny, when you're in your late 30s, 22 years old is barely an adult, you know? No offense, this 22-year-old woman. Was shot in the head by a cop. She died of it. And the cop got away with it. And get this, after the prosecution put on their case, the judge said, that's it, I find you not guilty. The lawyer, the defense team, did not even have to put on a case. The judge just said, nope. Can't do it. And then, so here's your funny little catch 22, okay? Judge Dennis Porter found Detective Dante Servin not guilty. He faced charges of involuntary manslaughter, keep track here, reckless discharge of a firearm, and reckless conduct, writes Gawker. Despite Porter's belief that Servin unloaded his firearm, which he unloaded meaning shot it until there were no more bullets in it, unload the barrel and laugh, which he referred to as an intentional act. He said prosecutors failed to prove that Servin acted with reckless intent, which must be proven when charging an individual with involuntary manslaughter. The evidence does not support the charges on which the defendant is being tried. So, anyway, that's kind of confusing, right? So, BMaz wrote about it. BMaz is a person on Twitter who's somehow slightly associated. I think he writes at Marcy Wheeler's blog. Am I right? He writes at Marcy Wheeler's blog, if I remember right. And so he pointed to this blog explaining what went on here. And basically what they're saying was that since what the cop did was deliberate, and what he did was he pointed the gun as he was fleeing. He was an off-duty cop, is the only reason he was charged at all, by the way, is because he was not on the clock at the time. He pointed the gun over his shoulder at a crowd and fired. And what they decided was, well, that is clearly an intentional thing. So it's not involuntary manslaughter. and it's not reckless because he intended to do it. Now, maybe the prosecutor could have tried to argue, yeah, but the reckless part, Judge, was the part where he shot this 22-year-old woman in the back of the head instead of the guy with the cell phone in his hand that he thought was a gun or whatever stupid excuse. So it must have been somewhat reckless if he shot the wrong person with a shot over his shoulder. But the point was, nope, sorry. Maybe he could be convicted of voluntary manslaughter or, you know, murder. But not involuntary manslaughter, because clearly what he did was voluntary. So, case dismissed. Charges dismissed. Not guilty. And the cop gets to skate. And then we're left to wonder whether the prosecutor did that on purpose. Was that deliberate? That they charged him with the variation of the manslaughter charge that they knew could not be prosecuted successfully? Oops. So, there you go. Anyway, you can read about it at Simple Justice, a criminal defense blog. The Pointed Gun and Mens Rea is the article that BMAZ linked to. I'm sorry, I read it yesterday morning, but I think I pretty much summed it up right. As outrageous as that is. And, you know, they said, I didn't see the pictures or anything, but in the news stories, they said that the courtroom just completely erupted at this. Are you kidding me? You know, it's just like I ask you about Israel and Palestine all the time. Just put the shoe on the other foot for a minute. If this guy, if this lady, if this young lady had taken a gun and fired recklessly over her shoulder into a crowd and shot a cop, this cop, Servin, in the back of the head, and he had fallen down dead, do you think that the prosecutors would have found a cute little way to make sure that she got away with it too? Oops, we charged her with the wrong brand of manslaughter. You think the judge would do everything he could to find a way to let her go rather than see her die in a cage decades from now? This is no place for emotion. This is a place for reasoned decisions, the judge said to the courtroom audience. Doesn't matter that this cop killed this innocent person. He gets to get away with it. And, you know, I don't know, man. I went to government schools. I understand the way, you know, how deeply inculcated we are in all this stuff. But I'm pretty certain that you don't have to be a radical, hardcore anarchist libertarian or some kind of hardcore leftist or God knows what kind of horrible right winger you might have to be to stop and question and wonder, do we have to have the system? I mean, we have our society, right? Between Bangor, Maine and San Diego, California, to crisscross it one way. We have our land. We have the USA. Do we have to have this government? Is this how it has to be? Because it doesn't seem fair to me, man. And I don't know. See, that's part of the whole inculcation of government school, too, right? Is the reason that you're supposed to love this system so much is because you get to participate in this power. That even the president is still just a citizen like everybody else. And the law applies to him and all of his executive branch minions. And the same for the county sheriff's department and everybody in between. And if they break the law, they're subject to it just like you, because it's the law that rules and not the men and blah, 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 and all of this. And yet, oh, not and yet. And so, some of us take it kind of personally when that's not how it is. You know what I mean? some of us think that, well, we ought to be able to change it. If that's supposedly the deal, if that's what supposedly so great about it in the first place, the right to revolution defined right in our own Declaration of Independence. I don't know. This doesn't seem fair to me. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future of Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you. All right, so yeah, I'm Scott. Yeah, I guess it's an important story, man. I should have spent more time looking at it, this Hillary Clinton thing. I just take it as par for the course. I don't know with these guys. Isn't that the biggest story here about the Clintons and crony capitalism? The Clinton Foundation scandal is all about the corruption of empire, says Justin Raimondo at antiwar.com. And it's that story I was mentioning to you yesterday. I never even had time to read the whole damn thing, actually. The New York Times story. See, there's this new book. It's called Clinton Cash, The Untold Story of How and Why Foreign Governments and Businesses Help Make Bill and Hillary Rich by Peter Schweitzer. And the liberal New York Times, even the New York Times, as they say when it confirms their bias, is taking this book very seriously, apparently. They're trying to, over at Media Matters or whatever, they're in a panic and saying that this guy's a liar or whatever, but it seems like he's got his correlations and his causations pretty clear here. And there's some really big examples here, like exempting certain telecoms or maybe all telecoms, but as a favor to Ericsson, from Iran's sanctions, a trade deal with Colombia, a uranium deal that let a Russian company buy out a American uranium company, increasing Russia's percentage domination of the uranium market on Earth. Like, we ain't got enough H-bombs. Anyway. And on and on. No, there's more. There's an oil deal in Kazakhstan. Right, was in oil? Oh, no, no, the Kazakhstan was the uranium thing. There was an oil thing in here somewhere, too. A General Electric bribe. And anyway, so Justin's point is, yeah, that's what empire is all about, man. It's crony capitalism on a global scale. I guess that's what the communists say, right? That the state is just the steering committee of the capitalist class, the very successful ones anyway, and that empire is the final stage of capitalism. I guess as long as you have a state, what are you going to do? Use your constitution to prevent it from going to war on behalf of the commercial interests who can afford to bribe it the best? And so Justin goes back to the Panama Canal and the original Age of Empire and all that kind of crap. But what's most important to me about this is just how normal it all is. And I think that what you're going to hear more than anything from the Democrats is, come on, man, this is just how business is done. This isn't corrupt. This is, what are you talking about? What, this is the American way. Right? Our government gets paid pennies. Our the individuals involved in our government, they get paid pennies to turn around and hand giant stacks of $100 bills to those who pay them the pennies. That's why people love it so much. It's the best return on your dollar that you could possibly get, especially when it comes to, you know, in foreign affairs. especially when it comes to military contracts. Hell, think about just how much money the banks make when the government transfers money to Lockheed. I mean, Lockheed doesn't keep that money in a paper money stacks in a vault at their headquarters. They keep that money in the bank. So the bank and the military-industrial complex, they're joined right there at the hip, head and shoulders, you know, all the way through, no matter what. It's the vested interest versus you. Keeping you safe ain't got a damn thing to do with it. And I think that Hillary Clinton probably will make the case that I didn't know that this was wrong. What's a conflict of interest? I never heard of that. And you know what's interesting, too, would be what's omitted here, right? How much money did she get from Israelis, and how much money did she get from Saudis, and what correlations might we draw that this perhaps right-leaning author might have missed, like regime change against the Saudis' enemy Gaddafi in Libya, the Saudis' enemy Assad in Syria, the Saudis' enemy Morsi in Egypt. What about that? The Israelis' enemy, Morsi, in Egypt. Gaddafi in Libya. Assad in Syria. Yeah, you see why the Israelis and the Saudis have been getting along so well lately. But how much money were they just putting in cold, hard cash in former President Bill Clinton's pocket to get his wife to finagle policies their way? On huge issues like, wait, why are we backing the Sunni-based insurgency who were the enemies from Iraq War II in Syria Civil War I? Does that make any sense? Oh, the Secretary of State is directly on the take. I mean, you would think that it wouldn't have to be that simple, right? You know, the scam is supposed to be once she retires, then she'll get to sit on the board of directors or this or that, you know, get a little kind of a thing. But no, they have Bill Clinton just going around with his hand out, just straight collecting cash all over the world. This used to be scandalous. Remember what a big deal it was when Bill Clinton was reelected governor of Arkansas and president again, based on money that he got from the Riotti family, the half-owners of the Lippo Group Bank in Indonesia, which is half-owned by the Chinese government, and more specifically, the People's Liberation Army. Hey, what do you mean a bank half-owned by the Chinese military is paying for Bill Clinton's re-election? That sounds like it might be scandalous. And then remember how easily they diverted everybody with that? They said, look, everybody, pay attention to Johnny Chung. And pay attention to Charlie Tree. And pay no attention to James Riotti and John Wong. Because, hey, they all look alike, everybody, right? You're confused already. I got confused just trying to remember their names myself just now. Look, everybody. Eh, this guy paid a little money, got nothing for it. These guys are the ultimate symbol of corruption on the planet right now. Look away from them. Riotti and his man, John Wong. And it was straight bribery. And it was a huge scandal other than the fact that it all fell apart in the face of the stupid Lewinsky scandal and all the rest of that crap. But back then it was considered a big deal that somebody who was running for president was getting a bunch of money from foreigners. Now that was directly into his campaign coffers. So maybe that's a little bit different, but still. But, you know, like I say, The term conflict of interest is out of style, like afros and brown corduroys or whatever. That's some long-lost term from some ancient age, you know, when everybody's stove was avocado-colored. And Nixon was run out of power. But nowadays, nobody even knows what that is. What's a conflict of interest mean? I never even heard that term before. That's called how we do business. That's what it is. That's how we do business. In Washington, D.C. Anyway, though, there should be enough scandals here to completely destroy her. I mean, the thing about that Hillary Clinton is she is absolutely shameless. The problem with the Americans, though, is they are too. And I guess, wow, gee whiz, we had our first black president. Let's have our first woman president. If TV says she's the most qualified one to have, then I guess it's her then. Is that basically all the entire decision-making process comes down to right there? Simple identity politics, no matter how horrible she is on which wars or which laws or anything else. Lost all her emails, still has all yours.
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more war in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C. But those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at councilforthenationalinterest.org. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
All right, you guys, welcome back. All right, so diplomats press on in Vienna for final Iran nuclear deal. Boy, if John Kerry screws this up now, I'm going to be really pissed off. Nah, that'll be fine. They're going to do it, man. They're going to have the dang thing. Kerry and Zarif are expected to meet next week on the sidelines of the five-year review conference of the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty. Yeah. They're both expected to address the conference on Monday. Iran's nuclear negotiator, Hamid Behdinejad, told Iranian state television that drafting the final deal has started, declining to give further details. Months ago, both sides announced that a final draft had been started. No, don't say that. That's not right. This is since the framework, you idiots. What are you, idiots or something? Reuters. Did George John make you write it that way? What kind of crap is that? Anyway, so there you go. They're working on it. Now check this out. AIPAC versus the pro-Israel Republicans. Admittedly, this is by Eli Lake and Josh Rogan. Eli Lake is absolutely horrible and horribly dishonest and helped lie you into the Iraq war and keep you there. Hatchet man for the New York Sun. An all-around terrible guy. Josh Rogan, you know, his politics are just like Lake's, but I kind of like him. He used to come on the show back when he wrote for Foreign Policy. I'd interview him from time to time. He gets good scoops. I haven't caught him lying. He has his biases. But I think he's an honest guy. I think he's a good reporter. So what can I say? I don't know. Got the two of them working together here. AIPAC versus pro-Israel Republicans. Maybe it is a matter of Rogan making Lake a better reporter than Lake dragging Rogan down to his level. I don't know. But anyway, so the story here is, whether you think it's more of an Eli Lake story or more of a Josh Rogan story, I'll leave that to you. But the story is that AIPAC is saying, hey, back off all these amendments to the Corker sanctions bill. The Corker review the Iran nuclear deal bill. Because AIPAC is afraid that if they add a bunch of amendments like, oh, Iran has to recognize Israel now, not after they get out of the West Bank, but now. And Iran has to stop sending money to Hamas or Hezbollah ever again, and et cetera, and whatever amendments they want to add to it. Israel is saying, don't do that because you'll make it too difficult to pass the damn deal. Let's just go ahead and get it passed. Whereas the Senate Republicans like Tom Cotton and the rest of the Bill Kristol clones up there, their idea is that they think they can win anyway, and they think the best way to kill the deal, which is what they want to do, is to add a bunch of completely unrelated and impossible to achieve amendments, terms and conditions to the deal, like you got to stop sending money to Hamas and Hezbollah ever again, recognize Israel, et cetera, et cetera. And you know, you got to admit, that this is exactly what the Leverets were predicting. That if Obama doesn't just summon up the courage, I guess, and go to Tehran, shake hands with the Ayatollah and say, all right, that's it. We're normalizing relations. Now let's work out these, you know, whatever other problems we have to work out. If he doesn't do it that way and he tries to do it piecemeal and especially tries to do it nuclear deal first, then what's going to happen is that they're going to end up, the Republican opposition, the Israel lobby's opposition, is going to end up scotching the deal in the name of the theory that, no, you have to solve all these unrelated things first. And that's why, and they, of course, use China as the example, and Nixon's going to China. They had, whatever, dozens and dozens, however you classify them and enumerate them, of outstanding issues with the Chinese communists, with the dictatorship of Mao Zedong, who is arguably the worst person who ever existed. And there was no way that Nixon and Kissinger could have gone and said, okay, let's begin negotiating on this issue and that issue, without being completely torn apart by the opposition in the Congress. So instead what they did is they just went straight to Beijing and shook hands with the monster and said, that's it, we're friends now, we're splitting you off from the Russians, which benefits us. And it wasn't just Nixon's anti-communist reputation, it was the fact that we were splitting China off from Russia that made it a fait accompli. What in the hell is Congress going to say then? Kind of a thing. And they just went ahead and did it. And then whatever outstanding issues needed to be negotiated, they negotiated under the framework of, now we're pals. U.S.-China Cold War is over. And that was what the Leverets were saying Obama needed to do. Just freaking get on a plane and go over there and say, enough of the Cold War. Let's be friends. We'll drop our sanctions. We'll open up trade relations. We'll work together against Al-Qaeda. And I'm not saying I really support that, but whatever. Better than this crap. Anyway, the deal they could have made. Work out all those details later, after the big warming up. And so I guess, you know, it remains to be seen what's going to work. But interestingly, according to Lake and Rogan, AIPAC is saying, hey, we think we got a better chance of killing the deal by getting this thing passed and signed first and dropping any new amendments. Isn't it amazing how easy it is for a foreign government to completely lock down an entire political party, the entire Republican Party, against a peace deal? Against a peace deal. It's really something else. And they have no argument. I mean, they really have nothing to say whatsoever, just like in this Politico story that I was telling you guys about from last week, from the 10th. GOP not arguing science on Iran. Yeah, really? They have no argument. So instead, they're just blowing hot air. They're just out to demonize the deal. As Dick Cheney put it, Obama is handing Iran nuclear weapons. Oh, really? He is, huh? That's a little bit dishonest way of putting it, maybe, huh? But here's the truth. I should say this every day till that final deal is signed. From Haaretz, Netanyahu told cabinet, our biggest fear is that Iran will honor the nuclear deal. Netanyahu expressed concern that Iranian compliance with the agreement will lull the world into complacency over the bomb threat. And what he says in here is that we will not catch them cheating because they won't cheat. They will follow every letter. Our greatest concern is that Tehran will fully implement it without violations. I'm not making this up. These are quotes from the Israeli War Cabinet. These are members of the Israeli War Cabinet paraphrasing their leader, the Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. They will keep to every letter in the agreement if one is signed. Netanyahu said at the meeting, Quote, Netanyahu said at the meeting it would be impossible to catch the Iranians cheating simply because they will not break the agreement. They will not cheat. And then, after 15 years, those wild and crazy Islamic extremist mullahs will have lulled the people of the world to sleep. And then they'll sneak up on us and make nukes and kill us then in 15 years. Oh, no. That's all they've got. That's what they're reduced to now. They will abide by their deal to enrich to only 3.67% and divert none of it to any military purpose. They're already abiding by the additional protocol that they haven't even signed on to yet, really, under the interim deal. They're going to be not just verified, but extra double happy lucky wish super verified to be safeguarded in every way in their nuclear program. And the danger is that all of this will go off without a hitch. And that then someday they'll decide to be dangerous. No wonder the Republicans are so upset, huh?